habits. When your money pan in Japan, still and no fi rock it in a habit. No matter how much cash in your pocket, when you see your car, she says.
My name is Eric Donaldson, and right now I'm inviting you to tune in to CKUT 90.3 FM on your dial. Oh, Eric Donaldson says so. Sing, tune in.
When your parents need your help, you're there. When your kids say something's wrong, you're there. When your friends have a rough day, you're there. Be there for yourself the way you're there for others, as it's normal for these uncertain times to bring out negative emotions or anxiety. If you're finding it difficult to carry out daily tasks, there are solutions. Visit quebec.ca/gettingbetter or call Info Social 811. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Welcome to the Prison Radio Show. My name is Candace, and I will be your host for today's show. Today on the program, we share with you an interview conducted by the Final Straw Radio with Daniel, Josh, and Sarah from the Certain Days Freedom for Political Prisoners calendar. We like to highlight this important project every year on the show because the calendar serves as both an educational tool and also as a fundraising tool for many prisoner support groups. But first, we'd like to share with you an announcement. For the past month, COVID-19 has been ravaging Saskatchewan's prisons, with hundreds of prisoners testing positive in Saskatoon, Prince Albert, and Regina. Saskatchewan is also one of the highest incarceration rates for Indigenous peoples, with around 75% of prisoners being Indigenous. In response, earlier this month, on January 4th, around 90 prisoners inside the Saskatoon Provincial Correctional Center and Pine Grove Correctional Center in Prince Albert began a hunger strike, demanding the resignation of Saskatchewan's Corrections and Policing Minister Christine Tell for her failure to prevent COVID-19 outbreaks in jails. Corey Charles Cardinal is a prisoner justice advocate incarcerated inside the SPCC. Corey Charles Cardinal organized the hunger strike and penned this letter to outside advocates, which I would like to share with you here on the show. I'm going to read it. Dear advocates, I speak on behalf of a generation of young lost Aboriginal warriors surviving in a postmodern day institution of colonial suppression that has unjustly labeled us as criminals and thieves as part of a 154-year-long campaign to diminish our identities as protectors of our people. Within this architecture of oppression, we are a vibrant community of strong, intelligent brothers who eat together, wrestle, and play together, and protect each other from a system that has exploited us. The system is rooted in a dominant mainstream society voter base that has, over 154 years, cultivated prejudiced values to elect a biased government that has reduced us to surviving on watered-down peanut butter sandwiches. It is true we have been targeted as Aboriginal men by a racist system. Despite this epidemic of incarceration, our resilient community of modern Aboriginal warriors has survived by will and creative ambition to prevail over many an enemy of poverty, addiction, and racism to find community and belonging and acceptance in this mainstream model of humanity. It is not by our own standards, for we are an oppressed people. We are inmates of not only institutions of incarceration, but every other institution that has dominated us for years. We are inmates of poverty, of high suicide rates, of disease, and of overrepresentation in the justice system. The current events surrounding the COVID-19 outbreak in provincial prisons is an example of the failure to protect vulnerable people in their care, an example of a 154-year-old tradition of ignoring the needs of a vulnerable people in their power to protect, which must not go unrecognized. This cycle of systematic oppression must be broken and must be recognized for what it is, a modern-day act of genocide meant to eradicate a vulnerable people. We humbly appeal to the intelligent, educated minds that are more suitable and equipped in logic and law to employ and unite in conversations, an inquiry into the epidemic of incarcerations, overuse of remand, over-incarceration of Aboriginals, and prevalent structures of colonialism, to mount a defense against the systemic oppression that has tortured our dignity and lives. Please include us in your model of humanity. On behalf of a generation of young lost Aboriginal warriors, Corey Charles Cardinal, advocate with the inmates. Following the publication of this letter, shared on the Briar Patch magazine website, advocates carried out a day of action in solidarity with striking prisoners on January 6th. Advocates also penned an open letter, which I also want to read here because it provides some additional context in the lead up to the prisoners' hunger strike. You know, a hunger strike is not usually the first course of action when trying to be heard. The open letter from advocates also presents a list of demands. So here's the open letter in solidarity with prisoners at the Saskatchewan Correctional Centers. We are a collective of community members, prisoner advocates, and penal abolitionists who stand in solidarity with prisoners at the Saskatchewan Correctional Centers. On January 4th, incarcerated people across Saskatchewan united in a peaceful protest and hunger strike to call for an official apology and the resignation of the Minister of Corrections, Public Safety and Policing, Christine Tell. This call echoes similar demands by Vice Chief Kim Baudin of the Congress of Aboriginal Peoples and NDP MLA Nicole Sauer, both of whom have also called for Tell's resignation. While Saskatchewan Premier Scott Moe recently said that he wouldn't change a thing about how his government has handled the second wave of the COVID-19 pandemic, Minister Tell and the Saskatchewan Party are clearly guilty of negligence, inaction, and indifference when it comes to the situation of incarcerated people in jails across the province. On two separate occasions, earlier in the fall in November, prisoner justice advocate Corey Charles Cardinal wrote to the Ministry of Corrections to decry the government's lack of preventive action and warn of an impending outbreak at the jail, underscoring deplorable conditions, lack of PPE, and increased risk to prisoners with pre-existing health conditions. Mr. Cardinal's letters received no response, and by the beginning of December, over 100 prisoners and about 23 staff had tested positive for the virus, then with the numbers later peaking closer to 150. On December 1st, over 100 individuals and 40 groups across the country signed on to our initial open letter in support of prisoners at SEC, calling for immediate action to address the COVID crisis and prevent a similarly dangerous spread at other institutions in the province. We called for immediate release, adequate post-release supports, sufficient PPE and cleaning supplies, and an apology from Minister Tell. While PPE is now available and numbers at SEC have been reduced, post-release supports are woefully inadequate, and Minister Tell has been steadfast in refusing and deflecting responsibility for the outbreak. Importantly, the number of prisoners at SEC has been reduced, not because of government will, but despite of it. In fact, Minister Tell proclaimed on more than one occasion that early release would not be considered. This lack of action and responsibility bespeaks a situation of unconscionable indifference to the health and well-being of people in custody. The health crisis at Saskatchewan prisons underscores the fact that COVID-19 disproportionately affects Indigenous and other racialized communities. In the Prairie provinces, Indigenous peoples comprise up to 60% of the federal prison population and up to 85% in provincial jails, like SEC. So in solidarity with prisoners at the Saskatoon Correctional Center and throughout the province, we advocates call for, one, a public apology from the government of Saskatchewan to prisoners and staff of the SEC for failing to prepare and respond appropriately to prevent the spread of COVID in Saskatchewan jails. Two, the immediate resignation of Sask Minister of Corrections and Policing, Christine Tell. The immediate release of all prisoners, including those on remand, those who are sentenced but near release, those who are immunocompromised, and those over the age of 50. The provision of adequate financial and other transitional supports to ensure that prisoners who are released are provided with the resources necessary for their health and safety. Five, also immediate and ongoing investment in communities rather than prisons, with the overall goal of moving beyond the current penal system, which is characterized by punishment and control and enacts and sustains colonial violence. We urge members of the public, listeners, to demand an apology and demand the resignation of Minister Tell. Here is now the Final Straw Radio, speaking with three outside members of the Certain Days Freedom for Political Prisoners calendar.
So I'm speaking with folks who were involved in creating and distributing the Certain Days calendar. And I was wondering if you could each give a brief introduction to yourselves, names, pronouns, and locations as you see fit, as like adds into the conversation, and a little bit about how you got into prisoner support.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to go first. My name is Sarah, she and her pronouns. I'm based in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. I guess I was inspired to start writing to prisoners around like the late 90s, early 2000s, partially around some globalization activism that was happening at the time, people that were being arrested, including friends of mine. It just sort of broadened from there. I learned about social justice activists and, you know, freedom fighters who had been inside for decades and the way that they were contributing to the ongoing movement. And I just felt so lucky to be able to communicate with them, so inspired to build those relationships and to continue the work that they were doing on both sides of the wall. So that's where I started.
I can go next. My name's Josh. I go by he, him pronouns, and I'm in Baltimore, Maryland. I got involved in, I guess, political prisoner support in 2006 or 2007. I literally stumbled upon a book in a small bookstore, and it was David Gilbert's first book, No Surrender. And I read the book, started writing to him soon after, and then a few years later was contacted by Daniel to be a part of the collective.
Josh, that makes me so happy that his book reached you like that. I love that book.
It did. I literally knocked it over. It was in the tiny Red Emma's bookstore. Shout out to Red Emma's. It was so small that you could barely move around, and I literally knocked his book over and ended up sitting there reading it for the whole day.
That's awesome. You talk about the first Red Emma's?
Yep, the original. Nice, OG. Nice.
That's exciting. I actually spoke at a book launch for David's book in 2004 in Boston with Kazi Turi, which was really exciting. I didn't really know much about David at the time. So yeah, I'll introduce myself. My name is Daniel McGowan. I use he, him, and his pronouns. And I'm from Brooklyn, New York. I am currently working with this collective, Certain Days, and I work on Eric King's legal defense, as well as with Los Angeles ABCF and New York City Books Through Bars. And I got involved in prisoner support shortly after getting involved in activism. I got activated at this place called Wetlands Preserve, which was like a bar and a club in Lower Manhattan. And I think at my first meeting I went to was an animal rights meeting. And I got involved in animal liberation prisoner support. I used to do support for Rod Coronado many years ago during his first sentence in federal prison. And I ended up doing a lot of fundraising for a group that was, you know, essentially just supporting animal liberation and eco prisoners back in the day.
Sarah, you were also, I don't think you mentioned it, but you were also involved at one point in Force Struggle Mag, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So for many years, I co-edited Force Struggle Mag with political prisoner Jan Lahman, which was aimed at sharing the voices of political prisoners and other prisoners in sort of current topics. So we talked about prison issues, but we also talked about everything that was happening in the world, and really tried to give people space for that dialogue and to get those prisoners' voices out into our current struggles.
Well, so I was wondering if you could talk a bit, each of you, about how you've been involved in Certain Days, sort of what the project is. A lot of the listeners will have heard past interviews that either we've conducted or we were talking earlier. We re-aired a conversation that folks from Which Side Podcast did with Daniel and Sarah. But yeah, if you could talk about the project, who else is involved, how the issues get out and how it gets produced.
Yeah, I mean, this is a big old question because we are celebrating our 20th year right now. And so much history when you look back at it. So the project started with political prisoner Herman Bell around the year 2000 with outside supporters in Canada and the founding members, David Gilbert and Robert Seth Hayes. We now have another member, Zanat Chli, who's based in Texas. And Robert Seth Hayes unfortunately passed away at the end of last year after being released from prison. So the idea really was to connect struggles across generations, across borders, across the bars that everybody, you know, was struggling against. And connecting these prison movements and these voices to ongoing social justice work. you know, we're really still trying to make that part of our project, to make these connections between all of these different groups, and to show how vital the work of political prisoners and the voices of political prisoners are in our day-to-day struggles. It's a round-the-clock, like, year-long process. You said this, Josh. We joke that it is a full-time job on top of our full-time jobs, which it is. And we love working on it so much. But you begin working on next year's calendar around now. You know, we're basically, the calendar is at print, and we are starting to think about what next year's calendar is going to look like. And you're like, you start writing the wrong date on the calendar in a hurry. You know, 2021 is in my head in a big way right now. And so it's this wonderful project where we have quite a small collective on the outside and our wonderful inside collective members, and then some supporting members and lots of other people who really help make it happen. But it is an incredibly small group of people that are making like thousands of calendars to put out every single year.
Yeah, I'll say also that, well, first off, you scared me just even talking about next year, because the truth is, like, I'm pretty uptight about timing and such. But this year, you know, our collective has just been faced with a lot of, like, obstacles. You know, there's the obvious elephant in the room, you know, COVID-19. But all of us in, like, you know, just our personal lives and such have dealt with a lot of situations that have just made it kind of challenging to produce this. It should be also said that, like, we, you know, we live in two different countries, and you might think, oh, U.S. and Canada, that's not, that border is not a really big deal. But, it, you know, it comes up more often than you would think about how difficult it is, not only to just be shipping the calendars and, the, you know, the kind of horrible prices of the U.S. Postal Service, but also just the fact that, like, it's very difficult for us to meet in person. I mean, it used to be that the collective would meet at the end of the year, like, in person and have, like, a full day thing. And that's been moved online. Some of the, you know, to be honest, we've all had our border difficulties. I'm not allowed in Canada. I'm a felon. You know, Canada has very strict about that nonsense, a legal fiction identity, whatever. So yeah, it's, I guess, intercontinental collective is presents a whole lot of difficulties, even if the countries are right next to each other. But yeah, like Sarah said, it's a really small collective. I mean, it's like six people, you know, really four main people and three people that are supporting members. And then we have like a host of people we work with. There's people that we consider shepherds, who are like people on the outside in society that like help us get art and writings from people inside. And, you know, communicating with people in prison is incredibly challenging at the best of times. It's really challenging during COVID-19 when, you know, mail is moving slower, not just from the post office, but the people that work in the mail rooms are very slow. And it was a challenge this year. Like it's an understatement to say that, but to be honest, I'm really happy with like how the calendar came out. And I think people will be satisfied. I think it kind of like really fits a 20th anniversary edition.
Yeah, if we can get through this one, I'm pretty sure we can do anything we set our minds to.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mentioned Seth, and I really had him in mind during a lot of these phases because he was very steady about things like that. And he would just be like, all right, let's figure it out, you know. And I miss him a lot, but I still find inspiration in all the things that he brought us and that Herman and David and Zanachli have given us over the years. So we've got this, like, amazing grounding in the midst of very chaotic times.
No doubt.
For listeners who don't know about the cases of David Gilbert and of Zanachli, would you all be willing to say a few words about sort of who they are and what the personalities are like and why they're inside?
I can do that if no one else wants to go.
Sure.
So David Gilbert was an activist in the 60s in New York City. He was involved with the creation of SDS, Students for a Democratic Society, at Columbia University. He was involved in nonviolent protests against the Vietnam War and racial justice issues for about 10 years before he joined the Weather Underground and was involved in sabotage against the U.S. government. He spent about 10 years underground before he was arrested in connection with a Brinks expropriation in New York State with members of the Black Liberation Army and white supporters. For his involvement, he was given 75 years to life, which means he'll be eligible for parole in about 30 years. He's already 77 years old. He's a great person. His son was recently elected as district attorney of San Francisco, Cheza Boudin. There's a current clemency campaign for David's release now, and you can learn more on our website. As far as Anatoly, he's been in prison combined, I think, over 40 years. He was still is a lawyer in Texas, representing Chicano activists and indigenous populations. He was imprisoned for disarming a sheriff who tried to assault or assassinate him. And for that, he was given, I believe, 50 years in prison. He's currently in the SHU in solitary confinement, where he's been for, I think, 19 years, maybe 20 years. He's still completely active, completely involved in like jailhouse lawyer work and things like that. Both David and Sinatchley are prolific writers, and I highly recommend writing to them or reading about their cases if you don't know more.
Yeah, I'll also just say about David, the absurdity is that in New York State, you have this thing called the felony murder rule. So David was a driver, like a getaway driver, in an expropriation from a Brinks armored car, in which there ended up being a shootout between some members of the group and the Brinks guards and the New York State troopers, I believe. And although David never fired a shot, he received a 75-year to life. And what that was is that three people were killed. And so David got 25 years for each person killed. And the government, the prosecution, stacked the sentences on top of each other consecutively. So, in some cases, you have like Herman Bell or Jalil Muntakim, who received 25 years to life. That meant they're eligible for parole at 25 years. But David is not eligible for 75 years or like 2056 or something like that.
Yep.
But I highly recommend people read Love and Struggle or No Surrender by David. They're really great. I think Burning Books in Buffalo or PM Press, Chris Blebedeb carry those books.
Yeah, I was going to say also I believe it was David Gilbert did an interview in the last year with members of TRAFE podcast, which is Jewish anarchist podcast out of so-called Montreal. That's in general, it's an amazing podcast, but it was such a good interview.
Yeah, that was solid for sure.
And if you go back into our archives, someone was kind enough to record some years back, like 6 years back, Zanotchley talking about his own case. It's like an hour of just him narrating, him growing up, going through the struggle, getting persecuted, just some amazing and harrowing instances of resistance on his part.
His case is one of the ones that really compelled me when I was in my like early work with political prisoners. And I remember when he got put into solitary confinement thinking, let's get him out, right away. And the fact that it's been so many decades now with this like absolutely brutal treatment just every day inspires me to keep doing the work.
Prisons are hard. Texas is terrible as far as the prisons go.
Just that the government is willing to spend way more money fighting the air conditioning lawsuit than giving air conditioning to people that are in the SHU, trapped in their cells 23 hours a day is unbelievable. I mean, that really speaks to the like penal mindset.
Every year when this comes out for the last 10 that I've seen of these 20 years, you get this beautifully formatted calendar that has amazing pictures that are submitted from people inside and outside. You get to see like little snippets of information and stories of people that produce the things, and also about people that are behind bars because of their participation in liberation struggles, historical moments that maybe you wouldn't know about otherwise. What can people, and every year there's a theme. What theme is it for this year? And are there any pieces that individually for you, not to have to pick your favorite child or whatever, but that really stick out to you and that you're excited about?
Yeah, sure. I'll tell you. It is our 20th anniversary issue, and we're excited about that. We decided to kind of do, just like a retrospective. And so the theme is a generation of support through the bars. And it's sort of just about like the last 20 years of support for political prisoners and their contributions. There's a lot of really good standouts this year. We have some artists that we've never featured before, as well as a lot of writers we've never featured. I will say that I hate to say favorite, but like my favorite is the cover. As you might remember, like our cover is usually a detail of a larger picture, but the cover is by Gray Rosa, who's in Chicago, Illinois, and it is beautiful. It's just bars and vines, essentially. Like I mean, I like to think pulling the bars apart, and I think it's lovely. The color is amazing, and it's just I love how crisp it is. But we have really good stuff this year. There are contributions from political prisoners like Veronza Bowers, you know, recently deceased political prisoner Tom Manning. There's Herman Bell and David Campbell, who were released in the last year. David Gilbert, Zigzag, Jan Lemann, Joy Powell, Laura Whitehorn, Linda Evans. There's a piece by Matt Myers. Of course, there's pieces by Zanachli. We have Art N and an article from him. We have an artist named Damon Locks, Monica Trinidad. I think I said Eric King already. I'm really excited about it. I think it's like aesthetically, it's beautiful. I'm really excited that we did a little bit of a redesign this year. Maybe people won't see it as a major redesign, but like our month pages look dramatically. I mean, I don't know about dramatically, but I think our month pages look super crisp. And when you compare it to like our 2002-2003 calendars, it looks like two completely different projects. And I think in that way we've grown. Obviously the software has gotten better, but you know, the collective puts a lot of time. I mean, Sarah referenced it being like a job. I mean, I think when we look at the amount of hours we work on it and the amount of hours we proof and email people about higher resolution images and shorter bios, you see like you know, we've gotten quite good at it. At just like learning how to make this one with this one thing. It's given me a lot of appreciation for anyone that's in publishing. Cause I mean, we are a collective that like distributes one product. It's like when we're dealing with like AK Press or Burning Books, we're always like, oh my God, you're managing like 1,000 things in your catalog. And we're like micromanaging one thing. And it's kind of shocking how detailed it could be. So yeah. And we didn't mention this yet, but the calendar is not just like a art project per se. We like to think of it as an educational project that educates people, you know, about political prisoners, prison abolition, what's going on inside, you know, the voices of people inside right then that are, you know, talking about what's happening. You know, there's going to be some content on COVID-19. Obviously, we weren't going to ignore that. But yeah, it's an educational and an art project. And the third function is that it is a benefit project. And so since we've started this project in 2001, we have, you know, essentially sold the calendar and given away the proceeds. And so like last year, we have sort of two pretty much permanent beneficiaries. One is Release Aging People in Prison in New York City. The other is Adamir Prisoners Association in Occupied Palestine. And then last year, we gave smaller grants to the Civil Liberties Defense Center in Eugene, Oregon, and the Rosenberg Fund for Children in Massachusetts. We're also, you know, just been doing really well selling our calendar. And so we're able to put aside money to pay for next year's print job. And we keep aside a little bit of money for sort of contingency costs that may come up, like people getting released from prison and needed help for their release fund or legal filing fees. Or, you know, we bought a number of the Tilted Scales book for some of the people that got arrested during the Floyd uprising, things like that come up. But over the years, we've given to like a lot of different organizations, including Amistad Law Project, Women's Wellness Within, the Abolitionist Law Center, the Freedom Archives, the TGI Justice Project, For Struggle Mag. There's just been a lot of different diversity of groups. We obviously give to groups that are working on prison issues, but beyond that as well. So we don't know who we're giving the proceeds to this year. We don't do it early. We wait until we're kind of done. And like Sarah said, the calendar is at the printer right now, and we've been engaged in pre-sales, and we will be, you know, making the decisions about who gets proceeds later, because it's not truly not that important right now.
Yeah, I would add to you know, it's so amazing to see what's happening this year as a representation of all the things we've done over the years. Like, we are able to give more money to groups because we've built this project and because people have been so supportive of us. And so I remember in earlier days, we would be so pleased to give like a little bit of money to different groups, and they were really grateful for it. And now to be able to like really substantially support different groups, you know, to really be able to say, hey, there's this struggle that's happening right now, and we have like a little fund set aside for it. Can we help? I think that's really wonderful. And also to look back at the art and writings that, you know, we've had over the years. Some of it is looking back at writings that we featured, you know, 5-10 years ago, and looking at some of those new things. And some of it is brand new writings that we're featuring this year. It's kind of amazing the way they mesh together, because these things are, you know, connected across that continuum. We've got art from new artists and from prison artists and from, you know, somebody like Tom Manning, a political prisoner who probably contributed more to the calendar in terms of art over the years than anybody else and was featured on the cover multiple times. So really proud and happy to be able to see all of that stuff, both the sort of symbolic piece of it and then the real tangible stuff that we can do in the fundraising too.
Here at the Channel Zero Network, we give no preferential treatment to liberals or conservatives. They all remain duct-taped in the basement until their respective ransoms are paid in full. This is anarchist prisoner Sean Swain with the Final Straw radio show on the Channel Zero Network. Channel Zero Network, because every countdown ends at zero.
You've mentioned a few names of folks that have passed recently or have gotten out. I mean, Tom Manning and Robert Seth Hayes lost last year. Pretty devastating. The fact that all of the MOVE prisoners are out now is pretty amazing. Julia Muntakim getting out is amazing. And also the arrestees from the Floyd uprising. I feel like this project is one of these really important things that, you know, as with the theme for the issue, ties together a generation and generations past of struggle through creative arts, through writing, through visual arts, through material support, in this really amazing way, and keeps this memory of this struggle that is ongoing alive. I feel like we really get the system. One of the things the system feeds off of is people forgetting and people going into their corners and being disconnected from this wider understanding of empathy and resistance that's based in love. So I'd like to, like, if y'all have anything to say about a little bit more about how Certain Days continues to support political prisoners as people get out, as the terrain shifts, and what you think about, like, what sort of things are carried through that project as new folks start going in for struggles in Ferguson, struggles in Baltimore, struggles in Minneapolis or around the country today. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I can try to answer that. I think, and I don't know if Daniel mentioned it this time or previously, but we all consider the calendar kind of a Trojan horse, where we just try to pack as much radical information and as much history in there as possible and hope that as many people can read it inside and outside as possible. But the calendar's been around for 20 years, and that's 20 years of history, you know, from the political prisoners and the prisoners of war that are inside now and that have gotten out since then or have passed away inside since then. So in the calendar, we really try to reflect that struggle, the pain, but also the victories involved, in the hope that the people reading it can connect that to the ongoing struggles today and can see in that history some way forward. And it's also a way to expand relationships across prison walls, not just for us involved, but for anyone who picks up the calendar and you know, becomes inspired to write to someone or to read more or learn more or go to a protest. And I think also for the long-termers inside, you know, not just David and Zanachli and all the other freedom fighters that are still locked up, but for the non-political people as well, I think the calendar really represents something steady in an otherwise unsteady life, something that they can use to track time, but to also, you know, see the significant dates and radical memories that are, you know, that are listed throughout the calendar as well.
Well, you know, the name Certain Days predates me. I joined the calendar as a distributor at first and then joined the collective not long after, but I wasn't there when they came up with the name. And to me, what I've always understood is this idea of certain days, like important things that you need to know in our history that you might not know already. I learn something every year from the calendar, and I've been doing it all this time. I'm always like, oh, that's so fascinating. That happened on this day, or oh, these are connected in a different way. So I always find that piece of it super interesting. And there's this like concept of like certain days ahead, like the certainty that we are building something better together. it's like a bit of a bigger idea, but I love that piece of it too, that like hopefully, you know, that certain ways is contributing to like a better future together.
Absolutely. And I think just to add to that, in our hopes of reaching more people and getting more people involved in the struggle, we post on social media all of these radical dates and these, you know, memories of struggles. And we also write a monthly blog for It's Going Down called Prison Break, where we do the same thing. We kind of connect current struggles with those throughout history. And just reading and reviewing and preparing those posts and those blogs, it forces us to learn more about the struggles themselves and the people involved. And I know for me personally, it just makes my reading list expand endlessly. But it's also just continuous inspiration at the same time.
So considering that this project has participants from both sides of that made-up line called a border between so-called Canada and so-called the U.S., but most of the prisoners that we've been discussing so far have been based in the U.S., and I know that the project has fundraised for Adamir also, for folks in occupied Palestine. But I was wondering, Sarah, if you could speak to the question of political prisoners in the Canadian context. Are there any recognized political prisoners, or how does that get discussed within Canadian borders?
Yeah, it's a great question. I would just say that the Canadian context is different. Although activists here may face shorter sentences in some cases, so you might not know their names and faces in the same way that we know others, they're still taken from our communities in many ways, being tied up in months and years of legal battles, facing repressive conditions. Most recently, we've seen Indigenous people attacked and arrested for defending their lands. In Unist'ot'en out west and closer to me with the 1492 Land Back Lane struggle, you can find out more about those online, and we'll probably have some stuff on the calendar site around them too, because those are struggles that are very close to what we're working on. Indigenous people in Canada are overrepresented in the prison system. And, you know, these struggles are all connected, as is the fight for total prison abolition. So it's something we really try and can highlight in the calendar. And, you know, even though our contexts are so different, you know, we're all kind of fighting against the same beast. So it's a great question and one that I think we can still keep looking at for a long time.
Well, considering the changes that have occurred this year, the inability of people to, you know, like share as much physical space, I would imagine that there's been a lot of changes in the way that you're distributing the calendar. Like Josh had talked about the, you know, using Instagram or using social media to get the images out there and sort of get people interested in the content. I know that, like, I'm not going to be tabling at a bunch of events. There's going to be a few events when we'll be able to bring out the calendars. But, and also, like, people get drawn in bookstores, for instance, when they see this, again, beautiful cover sort of like pop out and they're looking for a calendar, they're looking for something that can double as like educational and art and also like informative in that way. How are you all distributing the calendar this year, and how can people support and get their own copies of it?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. I think we're all a little scared that it's going to be challenging this year. But, like, you know, I'm just like, whatever, we're just going to amp up what we already do and basically ask for help in getting it out there. I mean, like you said, there's going to be people that are not buying, you know, necessarily bundles and, you know, selling them at table. And but I tend to think that the interest in the calendar has not gone down. And so we're just going to have to find ways to get those calendars to people. So I would say the best way in the United States to get it right now is through Burning Books. In Buffalo, you can order it at burningbooks.com. When you go to their website, it's really hard to miss. It's like right there, and it'll be parked there for a few months. Once the calendar is printed, you're going to be able to get it from Just Seeds and AK Press, minimally in the United States. There's a few stores that have already purchased it. We usually have it in about 15 or 20 stores. It's unclear right now whether it's going to be the same level. But like, for instance, Binnacle Books in New York, Left Bank in Seattle, Moon Palace in Minneapolis are some of the groups that have come out. I think there's a group called Bookspace Columbus in Ohio as well. So it's not that all the stores are not going to be selling. I just think it might be a little more challenging. And so some of it may be completely online. You know, in Canada, if you want to get between like 1 and 9 copies, you can get it from leftwingbooks.net, a.k.a. Kirsch Blebedeb. our website, certaindays.org, is handling bulk orders in Canada. Also say that, like, internationally, right now, Burning Books handles a lot of our international work, but we're eventually going to have it in the UK at Active Distribution. That's a pretty awesome, like, punk, like, DIY distro project. And then if you want to sponsor copies for people in prison or jail, like, let's say you have someone specifically you want to send it to, you can go to our site at certaindays.org and just navigate to the prisoner order section. And the copies are only $8. Most other people, including Burning Books, sells it for $15. And if you buy bulk orders, if you get 10 or more copies, the price drops to $10 each. So you get like $100. You get 10 copies, you sell them for $15 each, and you keep $5 for your project or your organization or maybe prisoner campaign or whatever. So yeah, I think that's the best bet. I know when you order from Burning Books, they have like a discount code. It's bulk, B-U-L-K. You can do that at checkout, and that drops the price down to $10 per. So we have people that buy, you know, 100 copies. We have people that buy one. We have people that buy 10. We're obviously always pushing people to buy 10 because it just works out. Like, you could buy 10 and give them away as gifts, or you know, we have organizations that buy them and give them as like gifts for their interns, their volunteers. We've had people buy them for like raffles and things like that. But yeah, overall, it's going to be a different year. Most of it is going to be online, but like there's still stores that are open, and we're hoping to do some of that. I told friends of mine that live nearby me that I will meet them on a corner because they're used to me carrying a ton of calendars for 3 months. And so I told them I'll meet you at the subway and we'll do it that way. I'm totally cool with that. So
if there's anybody that can force you into buying a calendar in person, it is Daniel.
I like to think it's just not forced, but more just persistent marketing, but fair enough. There's probably some listeners that are like, bullshit.
It's really just that look of disdain you get if you walk by the table.
I tend to think it's more disappointment, but it, you know, it's not as bad as when someone puts a drink on the calendar, as Josh and Sarah have both seen me pick up people's drinks and literally hand it to them and say that calendar is not a coaster. So
not a coaster. That's a very new slogan. I love it. But you know, honestly, I think people are home. There's lots of time to read stuff and look at stuff. They still need calendars. Actually, I think there's a lot of people that are really inspired about the things that have been happening in the last year. Despite all the frustrating things, there's a lot of pretty awesome stuff happening too. And so I'm hoping that we're going to reach some new people that want to learn about this history. And that was the whole point of the calendar, right? To bring some connection between what's happening now and the history of these social justice movements. So I'm hoping there's a space for that. And it's not any of the big, horrible stores to buy from online. So it's sure. Nice.
I will say also, like, you know, we didn't really talk about this, and maybe a lot of listeners have seen the calendar, but the calendar is like a calendar, and then it's kind of like a bonus section. Obviously, we print 12 original articles all along that theme. But like the beginning of the calendar is kind of like a little bit of an almanac. Like, we have like a section that is pretty heavily curated of books that we recommend, as well as some websites. But we have like a whole 2-page thing on definitions, because I feel like, you know, when I first got involved, I went into an info shop and I picked up some books from, like, it was actually Blackout Books in Lower East Side of Manhattan. I never even heard of some of these publishers. And I was like picking up some stuff from the free bin, and I had no idea what some of the words meant. And I was kind of like, I feel like people hear stuff like prison abolition, political prisoner, and are like, what does that mean? Like, really bulky jargon that the left uses, right? And so we try to just break it down and be more common sense. And, you know, there's a lot of really great info in the beginning. I mean, there's sections on David and Sinatra. There's our intro essay, which is kind of like tries to wrap up everything. There's 12 original essays, 12 original pieces of art, and then bios for our contributors, you know, which we... You know, without our contributors, we really have nothing, right? People are like really super generous about giving our stuff. And we do our best to print original content. I mean, we're not insane about it. So don't believe in copyrights and shit like that. But we definitely try to keep our stuff embargoed a little bit so people will actually go out of their way and buy a calendar, you know?
There's also a really nice memorial to Seth Hayes that Herman Bell wrote.
No doubt.
So if you don't have to be happen to be walking around the streets of New York and run into some guy with a trench coat who's like, hey, kid, you want to pick up a calendar?
Trench coat? Wow. Well,
I mean, just like, I'm imagining you've got a little rack in there that just extends out when you open it.
It's literally just a messenger bag that's too heavy for my back. and people see me and they literally just like, it always feels so damn covert. I flip it around and I'm like, how many do you need?
And you could double up and sell samosas out of there too. Like,
absolutely.
You could be like a little bodega. And like, just to be an utter shill, these things make amazing gifts. So especially if there's like folks in your life that with this, like the memorial you're talking about with the like vocab list at the beginning and like some simple definitions of terms, like that's the beginning of a conversation right there. So as we're moving into whatever gift giving season one might participate in, it's a pretty inexpensive gift that has a lot of power packed up in it.
So in the interest of shilling a little more, I'll just repeat that the best way to get it is through Burning Books, burningbooks.com. There are our friends in Buffalo. We love, it's an independent bookstore. If you're ever there, you got to check it out. You know, all this information that we've said, it lives on our site, certaindays.org. And we are on the usual social media sites like, I'm sorry, what do you say? Is it
Fedbook,
Twitter and Instagram. Somehow Facebook gets the burst crappy treatment, but Instagram and Twitter just get a pass. I never understood that. But then again, Fedbook is better than Facecrack, right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's just Twitter is just not, it's not as easy to, I don't know. Do you have a good, like, derisive nickname for the thing that you love to hate that's Twitter or Instagram?
Oh, no. I don't even hate Twitter. I'm not a hater. I am on Twitter all the time.
Daniel's keeping Twitter alive. I check it, like, once a month.
Well, thank you all for taking this time. Is there anything that I failed to ask about that you wanted to touch on while we're on the line?
No, I don't think so.
This is great. Thank you for your support. It's really wonderful.
Yeah, I just wanted to give a shout out to Eric King. He's not going to hear this podcast, and sadly, he's not going to even read a letter from me because he's on restricted general correspondence because the Bureau of Prisons are a bunch of haters, but maybe he can get a transcript. So shout out to political prisoner Eric King in FCI Englewood, facing 20 more years on top of his absurd 10-year sentence for an attempted arson of a congressperson's office in Ferguson, Missouri, or near Ferguson, Missouri.
In the middle of the night when no one was there.
Yeah,
exactly.
He got 10 years for that, and now he gets assaulted by this dumb cop in, that's redundant, sorry, by this cop in Florence, and is now facing 20 years. He's been in the secure housing unit, the so-called shoe box, whatever you want to call it, for years now at this point. It's seemingly going on 2.5-3 years. And he's fighting his case with some help from the lawyers at Civil Liberties Defense Center in Eugene. And we hope he just gets off because, to be honest, it's no crime to get assaulted by a dumb lieutenant. And that's exactly what happened. So,
absolutely. Also, welcome home, David Campbell and Jaleel Montequin.
Awesome.
And Jeremy Hammond pretty soon.
Hopefully,
pretty soon.
Yeah.
Yep. It's not all bad news. But yeah, no. If people want to learn more about Eric's case, where should they go?
SupportEricKing.org, or you can find like Support Eric King on, Jesus, he's on everything too. He's on Facebook, Fedbook, Twitter, and Instagram.
He's even got a YouTube page.
He does have a YouTube page, but I don't recommend that people go to it unless they like things like Taylor Swift and Bon Iver and like all this like stuff. That's one thing that Eric and I just agree to disagree on, his musical taste.
Yeah, as long as it's not Rush.
I can't believe how long it took.
we can't get through an interview without talking about
you're a disgrace to your country for not liking the best man. Sarah used to be, no joke, when I met Sarah, she was literally a roadie for the Tragically Hip. She'll deny it now, but I have proof, and I'm happy to send it to anyone that writes me.
All right, I just burst into flames first. Please help me.
I got nothing. They're technically a very good band, right?
A good band in every way.
Totally. They know how to play instruments. Nobody wants to hear their songs. Let's leave that one.
Can't even, like me, like everyone disagrees with that, except it is just unheard of, but we will agree to disagree. Sarah and I can find a way to work together despite her non-appreciation for Canada's best band. That's fine.
No, honestly, I feel like all political parties can come together if we can agree on this.
I basically try to get a Rush reference in every calendar and I get busted. I've like tried to insert like their names into the thank you section, and some of the collective members like this joke or tolerate it, I should say, and some don't. But you know, it is what it is.
It is what it is.
It is.
How's that for platitudes, nonsense terms, meaningless words?
Yeah, like Rush lyrics.
Oh, God.
So for anyone else who's interested in the audience and you want to pick up one of these calendars, just know that there's a magic eye with the last picture in it, where if you stare long enough, you'll see the cover of the last album by Rush.
Yeah, basically.
Cool. Well, y'all are awesome, and thanks a lot for having this chat and all the work that you do. And I wish you the best of luck, and I can't wait to see this.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I can't wait too.
Thank you. Great chatting.
Thanks.
Yeah, stay safe.
We're going to close out now with the track entitled Back to You, performed by The Hills, The Rivers. You can find it and more on the album Burning Down, the songs of anarchist prisoner Sean Swain, which is up at seanswain.bandcamp.com.
Since I've been gone, I'm a song without a band. Without you, I'm a beach without the sand. An arm without a hand, or a butt without the end. But I'm coming home and I'm coming back to you. Yeah, I'm coming home and I'm coming back to you. Since I've been gone, without a catch. Without you, I'm a stray without the edge. A whip without the latch. A wreck without the crash. But I'm coming home and I'm coming.
This is The Final Straw, and I'm Bursa Gunnis.
This show will later be archived at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, and you can email us with questions and suggestions at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net or thefinalstrawradio@protonmail.com. If you'd like to use any episode for your project or radio show, feel free to do so. Just send us an email to let us know. If you care to, you can send us letters at The Final Straw Radio, P.O. Box 6004, Asheville, North Carolina, 28816. This show is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Coffee. Located at 610 Haywood Road, Firestorm Books and Coffee is a worker-owned co-op in Asheville specializing in offbeat, underground, and independent literature.
That was The Final Straw Radio interviewing members of the Certain Days Freedom for Political Prisoners calendar, which has now been printed and is currently on sale. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Prison Radio Show on Ski T, 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and online at skiut.ca, broadcasting from Jojiage, occupied Ganiagaga territory. The Prison Radio Show airs twice a month here on Ski T. We're on the air the second Thursday of the month at 5 p.m. and the fourth Friday at 11 a.m. The next Prison Radio Show will air next week, Friday, January 22nd at 11 a.m. If you have any questions on anything you've heard on today's show, or if you wish to be involved in the show, feel free to contact us at prison@skiut.ca. Formerly incarcerated people are encouraged to participate. Thank you for tuning in to the Prison Radio Show on Ski T 90.
Sound.
C. K. K.
U.
T. T. 90.3 FM.
Another reliable communication channel.
He takes the beat down. He knows the plan, yeah. He working for the government.
CKUT
Radio.
Radio.
Sound waves in the air.
CKUT.
Montreal, Canada.
CKUT.
Good evening. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. I'm your host, Sarah Day, recording from home on January 14th, 2021. On tonight's show, I continue our tour of the free and virtual 24th edition of Wildside Festival at Centaur Theater. My guests include Amelia Sargeson of Fur Shame, using a lot of free time to create something new.
My journey over the past 10 months bankrupts language. We've all been riding these really huge ups and downs.
Sophie El-Assad of Black Balloon, Lila, in a similar position, branching out from design to writing and directing.
Where do I have to thank the pandemic for it? Because it sort of allowed me to stop for a minute and to think about how I can sort of create art without having to rely on other people. I'm very grateful to work with other artists, but during this time I had to find ways to work on projects that were led by myself.
And Greg MacArthur, writing an audio tour of the theater's future.
I really think of it as a really quite a confessional, like intimate experience for a listener, where